Fresh off his first win, the PGA Tour's latest phenom is going for two in a row this week. But first, Aldrich Potgieter is taking some time out to talk with us. The 20-year-old superstar in waiting joins the show to tell us how he got it done Sunday at the Rocket Classic. And as the tour heads to the heartland for the John Deere Classic, we have a couple of past champions checking in. Lucas Glover and Zach Johnson are never shy on opinions, and they'll be sharing a few with us. There's also a look at the best storylines to emerge yesterday from final qualifying for the 153rd Open at Royal Portrush. That's all coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
PPC Deer Run hosts the John Deere Classic for the 25th time in 2025. As the tour returns to the Quad Cities area of Iowa and Illinois, coverage beginning tomorrow on Golf Channel. And we are getting you set here on Golf Today. Welcome in. I am Eamon Lynch, and sitting beside me is Ryan Lavner. And we start today with some welcome news in the game. Keegan Bradley has announced the fifth vice captain of his backroom team for the Ryder Cup matches later this year at Bethpage Black. And that person, Gary Woodland. And it's an interesting sort of situation we have developing here in terms of the backroom team, Ryan. He joins Jim Furyk, Webb Simpson, Brant Snedeker and Kevin Kisner as the other vice captains. Two of those guys have never actually played a Ryder Cup.
Well, it certainly continues a theme of freshness, right, which clearly starts at the top.
The old coffee catch is now broken up. The old guys' network is gone.
Exactly. Well, I think there's a balance. And I think that's why Gary Woodland is a pretty good pick in this case. He's obviously a beloved figure on the PGA Tour. He runs in a lot of the same social and golf circles in South Florida as many of the players who are going to be on the team. He clearly has the intensity and the passion that Keegan Bradley is looking for. And if we're being honest here, regardless of what Keegan Bradley's playing status ends up being, Jim Furyk, a former Ryder Cup captain, and Brant Snedeker, the future President's Cup captain, is going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And that's going to allow a Kiz, or now in this case, Gary Woodland, an opportunity to learn the ropes and how the backroom staff actually works.
But does it also suggest that there's a dynamic at play here where Keegan Bradley is prioritizing, probably wisely, the idea of players who are, they're not only respected, but they're actually popular among their peers?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, sort of the old boys club, which has been criticized. But I think when you look back at last year's President's Cup, one thing that Jim Furyk really tried to instill in this team is a sense of family and inclusiveness and togetherness. They brought in the caddies. They brought in the wives. It was one big team as opposed to the players, and everyone else is cordoned off separately. I think overall for Team USA in unity's sake, I actually think that that's a pretty good move.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine he's going to find anybody more popular than Gary Woodland out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the players who the Americans probably wish they had on that U.S. Ryder Cup team is Aldrich Potgieter, who is one of the headliners in the field this week at the John Deere Classic. He's coming off his first PGA Tour victory on Sunday at the Rocket Classic. The 20-year-old made a 17-foot birdie putt in the fifth playoff hole to become the ninth first-time winner on the PGA Tour this year. The playoff, by the way, was the longest on the PGA Tour since the 2021 BMW Championship. And on Sunday, Potgieter became the youngest tour winner from South Africa and the seventh youngest since 1983. Yesterday, we had the chance to catch up with the latest winner on the PGA Tour.
And Aldrich Potgieter joins us now. Aldrich, congratulations on the victory. This was your second PGA Tour playoff this year. You lost one in Mexico to Brian Campbell. Was there something you were able to draw on from that past experience that turned it your way this week?
A big moment to step up as well. It was after that loss against Brian Campbell, it was kind of back in that same situation. This time it was three guys, so it was different, a little bit different. But yeah, I was trying to just stay calm, stay patient. I knew I wasn't going to get, they weren't going to get as lucky as Brian did. I think there's not many trees that could hit your ball back inbound. So yeah, I just kind of try to stay patient and knew that some chances were going to show up. And seeing Chris get out of the playoffs so quickly kind of put me in a mindset that, okay, it's only 1v1 now, so it gives my odds a little bit better chance.
Aldrich, just in general, you had close calls at the Ned Bank, at Torrey Pines, and Mexico, obviously.
In general, what did you sort of draw on those experiences that you found most beneficial that helped you in Detroit?
It was quite different in this practice, this round in Detroit. I was a lot more comfortable with the golf course. I played it in previous years, so I kind of knew a little bit more, had more insight about the golf course. So it was a little different. But yeah, going to that final round, struggled a little bit at the start, and when I actually lost the lead, I kind of was able to pull myself back out and kind of told myself, hey, let's go chase a little bit, chase these guys. There were so many guys on the leaderboard as well. Where at Torrey, there was only two or three guys who were really looking at the trophy. And in Mexico, same thing. There was only two or three guys who were really looking at a good chance. So, yeah, in Detroit, it was a lot of guys were on that leaderboard. A lot of guys were only one or two shots back. So we knew we had to step on the pedal to kind of stay ahead.
After that second place in Mexico, Aldrich, you had a bit of a rough stretch, missed six or seven cuts, and then you find some form at the Charles Schwab Challenge where you tied for sixth and then the win in your next start. Did something just click into place for you in that time?
Yeah, I spent some time with Justin Parsons, my coach, and we kind of started to speak the same language about my swing, kind of figure some stuff out. It's difficult being a rookie on the tour, new golf coaches, new golf courses, it's a lot happening at the same time. So it was nice to kind of speak the same language as with JP and kind of talk about the swing and kind of agreeing about on some things. And yeah, Dallas was nice, saw some good results from there, and I was able to go home for 3-4 weeks and kind of work my way into being a bit more comfortable with the stuff we worked on. So I think having that break, reset, mindset got cleared out, so it was nice to kind of see the family as well.
Aldrich, I wanted to ask you about that because this is a time of year when everyone is chasing FedEx Cup points. Why was it so important for you in the heart of the PGA Tour season to go home and see your family?
We had a nice gap in between some events. I took off Canada. I didn't play US Open qualifier. I kind of felt like I was playing so many events from February till June that it was getting a little too much. I need to kind of, and I spoke to my coaches as well, and they agreed, hey, last time I did have a good result, I had some time home before Mexico. So it's definitely a trend that I've seen happen a few times where I've been in a nice, comfortable scenario and then performed the week after. So I think it was definitely a good decision to make, and happy we did that.
I was struck by something after that Mexico playoff. Aldrich, you gave an interview right there on the green after the defeat, which was a masterclass in maturity. Was that difficult to do at the time, or is that just something you see as part of your professional responsibility, whether things go your way or not?
I think it's my time will come. I think that was kind of the big mindset I was having, knowing that you can't be in control all the time. You have to let some things go. So that was kind of a big thing that I had to get over, and luckily we got over it pretty quick, and I've got such a great team around me that kind of helped me to see that, and I'm only 20 years old, so I got a lot of time in front of me, so I knew that win was going to come pretty soon. So yeah, really happy to see it come really soon. So yeah, that was awesome.
Aldrich, you've always been ahead of the curve, you know, winning the British Amateur, winning on the Korn Ferry Tour. What about your upbringing do you think has allowed you to achieve so much at such a young age?
I definitely have been given a gift, I think, to be put in this scenarios. And yeah, I think my family's been great to me, my friends, everyone around me has supported me in such a great way. But yeah, I have to give a lot of glory to Jesus Christ. I think that's been the big thing that I've stood on my entire life. And big thanks to my family who's been supporting me through that journey as well. So I think a lot of that credit has to go to that side. It's not me. I've done a lot of work myself to get here, but to get through all of those high points, I definitely couldn't have done it by myself.
What changes for you now going forward, Aldrich? I mean, you've achieved what I assume was one of your childhood ambitions, to win on the PGA Tour. So what does it change in terms of resetting your goals moving through this year, and what has it actually changed just in terms of the freedom that you have in your schedule now?
It's definitely a big change after the win. A lot of doors have opened up. So, yeah, we're just trying to make the top 30 in the playoffs now. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. A lot of good things happen when you get into that top 30 in the world. So, yeah, just trying to get the world ranking down and go out and try and win almost every event. That's going to be the mindset going now. And trying to get in for all the majors. There should be a few opened up for next year's schedule after this win. So it's nice things to look forward to.
Aldrich, you mentioned the work that you're doing with Justin Parsons. I'm curious, when you have all of this power, all of this speed, all of this distance, what's the biggest challenge of reining that back with your approach play and some of your scoring clubs?
Yeah, we try to get the club a little bit more sitting in a right spot. I was getting a little behind with my takeaway and a little inside. So it was just a spot that I couldn't control the ball and flight as much. So once we got that club a little bit more on plane, sitting a bit more balanced, it was definitely a lot easier. And then I did the club fitting with Titleist with the guys in the UK that I've known for a while, and they've been really great to me. So we added a little bit more spin to my irons, so that gives me that control a little bit more. And yeah, last week was the first week with the set and the golf ball in place, so really happy with the result after 1 week.
Got to ask you, after you won the playoff in Detroit, you tossed the ball to a fan. Did you end up hearing from Grandma?
Oh, I'm going to try and get her some flags and some merchandise so she can put up on her wall. So hopefully she won't be too mad at me.
And I'm sure there are going to be a lot of mementos of your career in the years ahead to give to her. You know, actually, David Duval was the last guy who'd become a first-time winner on tour, win again the very next week. So you could make some more history this week at the John Deere Classic. Thanks for joining us, Aldrich.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
New status, new featured group. Puck Eater gets started on Thursday. The John Deere Classic will be alongside tournament favorite Ben Griffin and young hotshot Michael Bjornsson.
Let's take a look now at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10, which rewards consistent and reliable play throughout the entire season. And here's how the Top 10 looks as we head into the John Deere Classic, unchanged from a week ago. Scotty Scheffler still has a healthy lead over Rory McIlroy, but with that win on Sunday, Aldrich Potgieter moves up to 36th, just 5 weeks to go before the FedEx Cup playoffs.
And when Golf Today returns, we keep the guests rolling. Two-time major champion and 2012 John Deere Classic winner Zach Johnson stops by for a chat coming up next.
Golf Today, brought to you by Cobra Golf. Introducing the 3DP Tour Irons, printed for performance.
Welcome back to Golf Today, getting you set for this week's John Deere Classic, the 30th event of the regular season. Here's a look at the odds to win this week, courtesy of our friends at DraftKings. Ben Griffin looking for win number 3. Sold his favorite at 60-1. Danny McCarthy, a lot of love in social streets. Danny McCarthy could potentially become, like Aldrich Potgieter, the next first-time winner on the PGA Tour. And Ben Griffin, of course, won the team event in New Orleans earlier this year alongside Andrew Novak. Followed that up with a win at Colonial in the Charles Schwab Challenge. He's up to 17 in the official World Golf Ranking. And yesterday, he caught up with our Haley Hunter.
Well, Ben, first time playing here was last year. You progressively got better with every single round, final round 62 on Sunday. What do you like about this golf course, and what do you feel is going to be key for you putting up those low rounds again?
Yeah, I think it was kind of last year I was getting more familiar with the golf course kind of as the week went on. Kind of, I feel like you can't play most golf courses enough to learn all the different breaks and tiers and the greens and stuff. So, yeah I feel like this year I'm very familiar going back to last year, just have that experience. And so this year it's kind of the same thing. And yeah, we know the scores are going to be low this week. They are every year at the John Deere, so I've got to get off to a hot start and make a ton of birdies.
I know you're not a big stat guy, but you mentioned a few weeks ago you've been trying to keep tabs more on your driver distance, comparing it to other players. You mentioned you ranked 4th at the U.S. Open in driver distance. How are you keeping up with that, and what kind of goes into making sure that you're maintaining that consistency with how far you're hitting it?
Yeah, staying consistent in the gym is important for me. You know, going to the range and being conscious of trying to swing a little bit harder, trying not to you know, it's easy to go to the range and kind of have lazy swings and just kind of get loose and then go. For me, I try to focus towards the end of my practice sessions on swinging a little bit harder, try to gain a little bit more distance. And I've kind of been steady since the US Open. I haven't necessarily gained that much, and I want to gain a little bit more, but sometimes it's the way it goes. You got to listen to your body sometimes when you're traveling and trying not to push yourself too hard. But I do feel pretty good this week, and I'm excited to get out there and try to swing hard and take out some bunkers.
We're 6 weeks away now about from trying to make that top six for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Yeah. How much is that on your mind, and how confident are you that you can crack that top six?
Yeah, it's definitely on my mind. People mention it every week now. They're like Benny Bethpage or whatever. I've got all sorts of nicknames now. It's pretty fun. Like, look forward to seeing you on the Ryder Cup. But no, I've got to continue to play well. I think it's important to continue to play and stay competitive and stay sharp leading into that. So I'm obviously playing a lot of golf, just trying to continue to prove that I'm one of those best players to be on that team. And, you know, fortunately there's a ranking system and I can earn my way into those top six spots. So I'm just trying to earn as many points as I can between now and then. Got this week with a lot of points on the line, got the British Open with a lot of points on the line. So just got to continue to play well, keep the pedal down, as I always say, and just have fun with it.
Well, Ben Griffin and this guy are both winners of the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial. Zach Johnson's got a few additional wins that Ben Griffin would like to have, though, not least the 2007 Masters. We shot a final round 69 for a two-shot victory over Tiger Woods, Retief Goosen, and Rory Sabatini. And fast forward to 2012. This was the year he won his second Colonial title, but here he is at the John Deere Classic. This terrific shot from the fairway bunker on 18. Cedar Rapids, Iowa native has long described the John Deere Classic as his personal fifth major, and that gave him a pretty meaningful win back in 2012.
Another standout moment in Johnson's career came in 2015. As he won the Open at St. Andrews for the second major title of his career. Johnson shot 66 in the final round, come from three strokes back to finish at 15 under. He would go on to beat Louis Oosthuizen and Mark Leishman in a playoff for an emotional victory at the home of golf. And we're pleased to be joined now by Zach Johnson. And Zach, there's been a recent push on the PGA Tour for the biggest markets and the toughest golf courses. Why do you think there's still room on the PGA Tour schedule for the John Deere Classics of the world?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it starts with you know, the title sponsor, why we're here. I mean, you have the headquarters, which I was at last night, one John Deere way. I mean, it couldn't be more than about 6-7 minutes as the crow flies. It's even shorter. So you've got a massive presence and a really great community here. And you know, I mean, it's a pretty decent sized area as far as population in the Midwest. But you've got a great company that has their footprint here. And then you have a golf course that couples that, that's spectacular. So, you know, I think there's room for both, if I'm going to be transparent. But I think, you know, there's a reason why John Deere keeps renewing, keeps wanting to be a part of our product, and keeps wanting to showcase they're, you know, they're green and yellow, and obviously help this community in so many different ways.
Zach, you know you've been around for a long time when you start to compete against the kids of your peers. And Tim Herron's son, Carson, he won a Monday qualifier playoff to get in this week. You've got kids like Michael Lasasso, the NCAA champion, Jackson Coivin. They're all in the field this week. Does that make you feel old, or do you still think you've got something to show these kids?
Yes, both. I don't know if I need to show them anything, but I still think I can compete with them. I think I've, for the most part, kind of proven that. I mean, you know, for me, it comes down to being physically able to do it. I mean, my body is the vehicle now that needs to be tuned up as best as possible, and I've got a good team to do that. But yeah, it's kind of daunting at the same time. I mean, knowing that I'm competing against kids that are my son's age, that is just bizarre, but it's also awesome. I mean, I don't know if it's inspiring, but it certainly is motivational to some degree. I mean, the youth of the game are obviously, you know, the individuals that are going to take this game to new heights as time goes forward. So we have to embrace that and relish that. And, you know, for the most part, I've got to meet some of the kids. I don't know them all personally all that well, but great guys, great kids that, you know, fortunately or unfortunately are really good at this game.
Zach, to keep this theme going, you actually become Champions Tour eligible next spring. Have you begun to sort of envision what the next couple years of your competitive career could look like?
You know, I get the question all too frequent now. I really haven't. And I mean, I have, you know, just because of the obvious facts that I'm getting ready to turn to that age. But, you know, I've thought about it. I mean, shoot, some of my best friends are out there. You know, I mean, the thought of traveling with my wife again out there sounds pretty awesome. And that'd be a lot of fun. And I know a lot of the venues because some of them used to be, you know, on tour when I was playing a long time ago. And so that part's exciting. I say all that, but, you know, I still kind of operate right where my feet are, if I'm going to get cliche. I love still being on the PGA Tour. I love trying to play against the best in the world. I mean, that as a competitor first, that's what you want. But I also know that Mother Time, is that even a saying, it is up against me. I get it. I feel it every morning when I get up. But I love the work. I love to, you know, put the work in the dirt, as they say, and get after it. So, you know, a lot will be determined, honestly, in the next 2 months as to what's going to transpire next year for me. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with whatever comes my way, but I can tell you I'm going to give it everything I have to go out and compete and essentially try to win golf tournaments.
Speaking of which, you're 103rd in this year's FedEx Cup standings. How are you and your peers sort of viewing this shift that has happened on the PGA Tour, the top 125 eligibility and keeping your cards to now 100 and you finding yourself right on the bubble?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't really given it a whole lot of thought, nor have I had many discussions with it. I mean, it's the evolution of our sports, the evolution of the tour. You know, we had a nice meeting last week with tour representatives, current and future. And I get it. I mean, I you know, I don't need to know all the nuance of it. I don't need to know all the specifics. I've been on those boards and those committees, and I trust the powers that be are doing the right thing as far as, like I said, the process and the evolution of our sport and our product. You know, and I'm fully embraced it. So it is what it is. We know what the numbers are, and I you know, that's motivational. If anything, that's what's keeping me going to see if I can, you know, garner a spot next year and have options. That would be an amazing opportunity. So it's not going to be easy, and I'm okay with that. I actually had 7 weeks off up until last week. I haven't done that in a long time. Much of that was forced because I wasn't in the U.S. Open and wasn't in some of the signature events, obviously. So, but now I'm ready to go. I played last week in Detroit, and so I'm playing the next 4 out of 5 from here on out. So that'll be 5 out of 6. And what that is opportunity. I love going back to that word. I love what it means, and you know, just get after it and compete hard. That's what this game's all about.
Zach, your successor as Ryder Cup captain, Keegan Bradley, announced his 5th vice captain this morning. Mm-hmm. Gary Woodland, obviously a very popular guy on tour, and he joins Jim Furyk, mm-hmm. Webb Simpson, Brant Snedeker, Kevin Kisner. Two of those guys have not actually played Ryder Cups, but are among the more popular guys in the locker room. Are you surprised in any way in terms of the backroom team that Keegan is putting together?
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, technically, I'm still on a Ryder Cup committee with the PGA of America, which I certainly love. And we obviously, as Team USA and as a peer of these gentlemen, we trust what Keegan and that group wants to do. I mean, he's putting a lot of time and a lot of effort into it and still playing well, which is amazing. And so, you know, I think he's got things in place that he feels will be great for success in New York, and that's all you can do. And it's hard. I've been in that position, but I really appreciate and certainly support any and all decisions that Keegan and his team has made, because I know he's doing it for the betterment of the team and not himself. It's a role that he is taking very, you know, very much highly, and will do a great job. He already has. So. Shoot, he might play. Who knows? I don't know what the discussions are like there, but that's a man that could play too. So, but those gentlemen that he has, that are confidants of his now, and they'll do a great job. The guys want to be around them. Number one, number two, you're talking about quality character, high integrity individuals that will put the team first.
Just this idea of Keegan being a playing captain. There's no one better positioned to actually talk about this because you've just vacated that job that Keegan now has. Had you been playing at that level back when you were the captain. Could you have imagined dividing your time between being inside the ropes and outside the ropes in both of those roles that week in Rome?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a massive hypothetical. I could not personally, but I wasn't playing at near the level that Keegan was playing then or now. So, and no one's surprised by that level. I mean, we're talking about a stalwart in our game. No, I cannot, but I say that, you know, it's hypothetical. I don't know what would have transpired if that was the case. You know, this year, you know, they're going to have difficult choices regardless if he's playing or not. But ultimately, I firmly trust any and all decisions that they'll be making.
Zach, though you were part of Tiger Woods' backroom staff in 2019 at the President's Cup, and I know it's a little bit different format. Mm-hmm. It's 4 days instead of three. What do you remember about that week, though? Mm-hmm. Tiger's sort of dual responsibilities and anything additional that may have been on your plate?
Yeah, well, yeah, a phenomenal week down in Australia, a trying week, you know, when you compound time change and acclimation and all that, which is obvious. We knew that. The main thing that I remember there, and I knew it beforehand, but it was really brought to light that week, is really how well, how efficient, how effective Tiger is with compartmentalizing. The man is able to essentially was able to wear two different hats at any beck and call. And now when it was time to be a captain and be a leader, which he did phenomenally, he wore that hat and he did it great. Oftentimes just by example, oftentimes verbally and around the team. But when it was time to go out and compete, he shifted over and it was like a switch went on, right? I mean, it was like, we've all seen it, and that's what I remember, and that's what was the most impressive thing about it. And I think as a, you know, he led by example in both, with both hats, as a leader and as a competitor. That trickled down to the whole team, and obviously we had success there in the end. Trying week, hard week, but, man, what a great week. And having Tiger lead those players was inspirational.
Well, you're also a guy who knows something about going from being a captain to being a player, which you are this week. We always appreciate the time, Zach. We look forward to seeing you teach those kids a few things out there this week.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be teaching them, but I'll be hitting first in the fairway a lot. But I'm excited for the week. I love it. It's like a home. It's another home for me, you know, being an ambassador of this great company and this tournament. So I love it. I appreciate you, gentlemen.
Great. Play well.
Appreciate it, Zach. And when Golf Today returns, shift our focus to the next men's major, the Open Championship. Some interesting storylines coming out of final qualifying on Tuesday, including 52-year-old Lee Westwood, who will be teeing it up in a major for the first time in 3 years.
We're back on Golf Today. Let's give a special shout-out to 26-time LPGA Tour winner and World Golf Hall of Fame member Judy Rankin. She's been awarded an honorary Doctor of Laws from the University of St. Andrews. Another accolade in a pretty incredible career. Let's hear what Judy had to say following the honor.
I've loved every minute of it. It's really been so special to me, and just so special. And I think this place is so special, both the university, the town, the golf. I like it a lot.
She joins a pretty esteemed list. This is just a selection of golfers who've received honorary degrees from the university at the home of golf, including, of course, Jack Nicklaus, a two-time Open champion there. Nick Faldo also won the Open at St. Andrews. Seve Ballesteros, and of course, Judy.
And Eamon, speaking of St. Andrews, it was at the home of golf back in 2000. Tiger Woods won his first Open title and his fourth major championship. The win was part of his epic 2000 season, which featured 9 victories overall. And all year on Golf Channel, we are celebrating the 25th anniversary of Tiger's 2000 season. You can relive the action as we revisit all 9 of Woods' wins in 2000 in order tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune into Golf Channel as we bring you Tiger's win at the Open in 2000.
Speaking of the Open, on Tuesday, 20 players earned places at the 153rd Open at Royal Portrush through final qualifying. 288 guys began the 36-hole day, which is staged at four venues: Burnham and Barrow, Dundonald, Royal Cinquart, and West Lancashire. Five places in the Open were available at each of those venues, and here are some of the notables who qualified. Lee Westwood, a many-time winner on the European Tour. He made it through at Dundonald Links. Dean Burmester and Lucas Herbert, also on that list, regular winners over on the DP World Tour. So there's some really interesting storylines came out of that, Ryan, yesterday. I'm just curious if you think there are enough places at final qualifying for the Open, because when you look at golf's longest day and a couple of qualifiers that were held prior to golf's longest day, there were almost 70 golfers in the 156-man field at Oakmont, made it through that way. There are 20 here. The flip side is, I guess, the Open does have an Open qualifying series, so there are a lot of tournaments held earlier in the year that have two, three places involved. But there is some charm in the shootout of the one-day 36-hole qualifier to get in there. Do they need to really lean into that more?
I don't think so, personally. I mean, 20 seems like plenty. As you mentioned, there's many avenues for these players to get into the Open Championship. Just next week at the Scottish Open, you're going to have the top three finishers not otherwise eligible getting into the year's final major. That feels like the right balance to me. And we still have these great storylines that come out of it. And just keep in mind, just last year at Troon, Justin Rose and Daniel Brown, who was in the mix of 36 holes, both of those players got through qualifying. So it's not just no names and feel-good stories. These guys can actually contend as well.
I got to say, to me, the best story that came out of it yesterday was a 20-year-old amateur from Estonia, Richard Teeter. And he actually double bogeyed the last hole of the playoff to find himself in a 4-for-2 playoff. Drives it down there at 340 yards, and then from 80 yards in the playoff, he knocked it in for eagle. So that 20-year-old amateur becomes the first Estonian ever to play in the Open Championship, thanks to that shot. These are the kind of, you know, Cinderella stories that golf delivers, and particularly final qualifiers too, because he's not a guy that anybody would have looked at the start of the day and think, well, this kid's going to play his way into a tee time at Royal Portrush when a lot more accomplished players are going to be on vacation that week.
Yeah, that's the beauty of these types of tournaments. We've covered golf's longest day for a number of years now. I would look sort of conversely at some of the players who are more deserving, maybe warranting a spot in the Open Championship. I think it's certainly notable that LIV players medaled at three of the four qualifying spots. Dean Burmester shot 64 in the second round at Royal Cinquart. That was the best round of the day by five shots. Lucas Herbert said he got in so late from Dallas that he basically just took his 8-iron, went down to the beach near Hoylake, and just started hitting about 30 balls on the beach to try and get warm. To me, Lee Westwood was the most notable player. 52 years old, hadn't even tried to qualify over the last couple years, did the journey like everyone else who played on LIV Golf, about 5,000 miles from Dallas to Dundonald, got in on Monday night, walked the golf course, said he slept about an hour and a half, played 36 holes, and shot 7 under par. Can Lee Westwood turn back the clock at Portrush? He did finish fourth there in 2019, and as you know, the Open is more favorable to the older players. You can use the ground, you can use your guile, you can use your experience. It wouldn't surprise me completely if Lee Westwood, who hasn't done much on LIV over the past couple years, is able to at least string together a couple of competitive rounds of Portrush.
Well, we've seen Tom Watson and Greg Norman certainly deliver in the Open Championship in their 50s. And speaking of going to venues with good vibes, we have another guy who's got good vibes at TPC Ardeer Run coming up, Lucas Glover. He's never a wallflower on issues that matter in this game. He's going to be joining us right after the break.
Shifting our focus back, this week's tour stop in the John Deere Classic and the final round in 2021. Lucas Glover carded a 64 to finish at 19 under for the tournament, two shots clear of the field to claim his fourth PGA Tour victory and first in more than a decade. Look at this statistical oddity. In the 2021 season alone, there were three drought-busting victories that spanned more than 7 years. It's time now for a past champions chat, which was joined by Lucas Glover. And Lucas, you're a longtime supporter of the Deer. Even in these changing times on the PGA Tour, why do you think that this small market tournament has endured as long as it has?
I just think, first of all, the people, they do an unbelievable job here for us. The golf course is really good and fun, and it's a fun event, and, you know, good spot in the schedule for the golf course. Firmer this year than in the years past. It's not, hadn't been quite as hot, I think, as it can be here leading up to the event. So the greens got a little bounce to them. But overall, just a great event. They do a heck of a job. John Deere, the great sponsor, obviously. And I just think everybody enjoys the golf course. It's a lot of fun and make some birdies and have some fun at the same time.
Lucas, you're obviously back at a venue where you have good memories having been a champion there. You're coming off a top 10 in the Travelers in your last start. What are your expectations for the week?
Same as every week. Just try to play good, consistent golf and just try to get in the hunt Sunday. I think that's every week now. Just gotta be a little more consistent on the greens and try to get in shape on Sunday.
Lucas, you were pretty vocal about this, but I'm curious, as 2025 has gone on and we're all sort of experiencing this together, have your views at all changed about field sizes and cutting PGA Tour cards?
Not at all. I'm pretty adamant that was short-sighted, and I still feel that way.
You're 30th in the FedEx Cup rankings right now, Lucas. You're locked for the playoffs. You're not in danger of losing your tour card at all, but you've consistently spoken out in behalf of those who aren't in the same kind of position you are. Why do you continue to kind of advocate for something that doesn't necessarily, at this point in your career, directly impact you?
I think everybody should have a voice, and I think everybody should be taken into account when decisions are made, and limiting access is not a way to grow the talent coming into the PGA Tour, in my opinion. Making fields smaller doesn't increase competition. That's impossible. It doesn't make any sense. We're the only sports organization that's saying that less players means more competition, and that's been my soapbox. Every other sport has widened their fields, broadened their playoffs, more games, more teams, expanding, and we're using pace of play as a crutch to say we need less players, and I don't agree with that, and I think that's short-sighted and honestly not the right way to go about it. We're trying to grow the game and create opportunities for young players to be the next superstars, for consistent older players to have a place to play, and limiting that is not the way to do that, in my opinion.
Lucas, if you've had an opportunity to attend any of the player meetings involving new CEO Brian Rolapp, just curious your impressions of him.
Yeah, I have. Hartford was great, and I was very impressed that he was going to Detroit the next week to address the rest of the tour that was playing there. I thought that was awesome of him to make sure he covered all of his bases and that the tour got him in front of both fields, because, you know, they weren't the same fields, obviously. Very impressive. Impressive resume, impressive guy. Ended up meeting him on the range after the meeting and spending 30, 45 seconds with him. He was working the range, meeting everybody, and he's an impressive guy. Couldn't have been nicer to me, and very pleased to see where we go from here with him.
If Brian was to call you, Lucas, and ask you what should be his couple of top priorities from your standpoint on the tour, what would you tell him?
I think just transparency. I think transparency. We need to know. We need to know a little more what's going on. We need some understanding as a whole, not just the guys on the board, not just the guys on the pack, just as a whole. I would really like to revisit this field size thing personally. If I do get a chance to talk to him or sit down with him, those are the two things that I plan to talk about.
Lucas, I know Jay Monahan has said that he's going to remain with the PGA Tour through the end of his contract in late 2026. But how do you think that his legacy as commissioner of the PGA Tour will be remembered?
He had some difficult roads to hoe. COVID, live, this private equity takeover situation. Jay was dealt a pretty difficult hand, but did a great job. I wish him the best, obviously, and you know we got him for another year and a half, which is great, and he'll transition Brian into a great role. But Jay was dealt a pretty tough hand, navigated it best he could, and put us all in a decent situation. Obviously, there was no perfect solution because of that hand he was dealt.
One of the things that Jay did was that the player equity plan that was announced last year, Lucas, and I don't know if you had a chance to read a story in Golf Week yesterday in which several veterans, notably Nick Faldo, Tony Jacklin, bemoaned the fact that they're not included in that among the veterans categories. They said they helped build the tour and they ought to benefit from that. Do they have a case in your mind, the veterans, beyond the mere 36 veterans who were part of the plan?
I didn't read that. I can't really speak to that. I didn't fully read the criteria for the veteran involvement, so I would be I'd be making something up if I said something, and I don't know the criteria for that. But just name recognition, absolutely. But again, I don't understand the criteria because I haven't studied that.
Is that a sentiment you think does kind of exist in the game among veterans? Because we do hear it sometimes from Champions Tour players, this sense that the young top stars today are leveraging the game that was actually built by generations of guys who've gone before them who won't necessarily benefit from that. Do you think there is that schism, or do you sense that even still out there among the veterans versus the younger guys?
Yeah, potentially, but I think we see that in every sport. You know, salaries have gone up and retirement plans have gone up and all the things that we've benefited from. So all the guys that paved the road for current athletes across all sports probably feel that. And, you know, if it keeps growing like it's growing, I'll feel that way too in 15 years. But yeah, I think it's a legit conversation, a legit argument. But I think it's across all sports, not just ours.
Lucas, speaking of veterans, you turn 46 later this year. You've been doing this for more than two decades. You've made more money than you could ever spend in your lifetime. Have you ever struggled with desire or motivation in sort of these later stages of your PGA Tour career?
Luckily, not recently. That stretch ahead, when the putting was so bad, there was some thought of hanging it up and figuring out how to support my family the best way possible and not put them through what I was having to go through on the golf course. But once the long putter and my work with Jason Kuhn kind of came full circle, the motivation came back. I never actually gave up on myself. It was just more of I got to support a family now, and I wasn't cutting it in the mid-2010s there. There was some thought of that, but the motivation never went away. It was just trying to be a smart husband and father. But when all that came around, I was right back where I wanted to be, and competing and in the mix and working towards a goal, and I've been able to do that well into my 40s.
Well, we always appreciate your time and your insights. We hope you get to keep doing this for a few years longer as well. Thanks for the time today, Lucas.